Maintaining a long-term relationship continues here with the subject of separations and reunions. It's a very big deal when talking about secure functioning relationships. We're going to have to go back a little bit to the differences between anchors, waves, and islands to reinforce how important this is. You might think of relationships as a series of separations and reunions. We're going through that every day. The small ones, leaving for work, going to the market, going into another room to watch a television show, being away from the other person. These are all separations and reunions coming back together again. Most people don't think very much of these, but there are some people who actually react very strongly to separations and reunions. For instance, waves, like I mentioned earlier, have a particular sensitivity to separations and reunions having to do with abandonment, missing the other person, sometimes not being able to contact their partner during the day, or say during an extended vacation or trip, business trip, and then having to deal with the reunion. Everybody reacts to separations and reunions, but not everybody knows how they are reacting. For instance, the island reacts to separations and reunions, but will appear as if they don't care, that they're indifferent, that nothing is really happening. But they, in fact, are also reacting to separations and reunions as well. Reacting to separating from your partner and reuniting is normal. It is not normal human behavior to be indifferent on separation. It's not normal human behavior to be indifferent on reunion. For people who are in that arousal spectrum that I talked about, that are massively extreme, an airplane, a real airplane who's married to or living with a submarine, reunions and separations are critical for those folks too, because as I mentioned, they're so far away from each other on the arousal spectrum that they smack into each other each time. And if they don't understand this difference between each other and they don't work with that reunion problem in a way that, like in dating, spends time to average each other out, they're going to build a threat response in one another. And that threat response will amplify their differences and they'll look more airplane-ish, more submarine-ish. They'll look more extreme. And that's true, by the way, with everybody we've talked about so far. When there is threat in the relationship, when there is unrepaired injury, that begins to cause an amplification effect of what seems wrong in the relationship. It's an illusion, but it feels very real for the people who are in it. For people who aren't very good at repairing injuries or not very good at handling their partners or understanding their partners, they're bad at everything we've talked about so far that they should be good at. Down the line, they begin to become caricatures of themselves. They begin to make the other person look extremely this or that. And that's just a phenomena of the threat response of pushing each other to look as bad as possible because there's been so little friendliness, so little skillfulness in the relationship that people are just at their worst. But separation and reunions. Children, we know, have vulnerable times with this issue of separating and reuniting. One such time is bedtime, nighttime, classically. Why is that a problem at nighttime? Why is it such a big separation? Well, because we're going from a conscious state to an unconscious state. We're really moving away from everybody and going into the abyss, to some unknown place. And in the process of falling asleep, we go through several states on our way to sleep, some of which can be scary, especially if you're a child. And one of the ways we tolerate the separation as children is that we have, hopefully, caregivers that help us make the transition, that sit with us a little bit. I'm not talking about the parents that never leave the bedroom and sleep on their kid's bed. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about just reasonable transitions helping the child move from daytime wakefulness to nighttime sleep and unconsciousness. And sometimes that's done by reading stories, singing, saying prayers, revisiting the day, reviewing the day, and so on and so forth. But something to help the transition. And then in the morning, there's another problem that children experience, and that is moving from sleep to wakefulness. And again, there's a transition process here. More dreaming occurs in the morning. And there is a waking up to the day, which is a little disorienting for everybody. You know, waking up out of unconsciousness, and it's just a moment of disorientation. So having someone there, imagine as a child waking up and there's nobody around. That would be very hard for a kid. Having someone there to greet you as soon as possible in the morning. Other separation for kids is being at school. Separation anxiety, going to school, having to deal with stranger danger, having to deal with other kids. Some kids do better than others with these separations. The WAVE family dynamic is built around this idea of feeling overwhelmed and feeling that there isn't enough support and feeling that there's too much of this or too much of that. And also a theme of abandonment, of being left. And that kind of carries over to the WAVE child. So much so that WAVE children, when in the room with their primary caregiver, tend to be whinier than anchor children or island children. They tend to be whinier and fussier. They make a lot of vocalizations. They are preoccupied with their parent. They want to be close to their parent. They can't seem to move out into the environment because they don't feel safe enough. They have to keep their eye on their parent. And they're constantly trying to seek proximity and maintain contact with their parent, with their caregiver. The same thing with WAVE adults. WAVE adults, during separations, sometimes have trouble dealing with their environment, having the motivation to do things, the energy to do things. It's as if they're waiting for their partner to come home before they feel okay. This is not always the case, but it can be the case. The time of separation can be very difficult for WAVEs. The time also being in the room with a partner for a WAVE can be difficult. Often, WAVEs will say, if a partner is distracted, be with me, look at me, talk to me, play with me. And we see that also in WAVE babies and WAVE children. That's because they have a real problem with a parent that's preoccupied and isn't paying attention to them, is in the room with them and ignoring them. So this actually comes from somewhere. There's a real experience there with being in the room with someone who's not really available. And then that gives rise to clinging. And so that may happen also in adulthood. Nighttime can be a problem for WAVEs because it represents a reunion and a separation. Reunion into bed, together again after a day of work, perhaps. But now we're also getting ready to go off into literally our own worlds and our own heads in sleep. And this causes a surge of anxiety oftentimes for the WAVE that gives rise to the need to talk. And oftentimes the talk is some way of securing the relationship, making sure that it exists, making sure that everything's okay. And unfortunately, the WAVE, because of his or her style of being negativistic and her way or his way of speaking in some way, it may come off wrong because unlikely is a WAVE who's not learned about being a WAVE and what to do, will say to his or her partner, I missed you so much. I just want to connect with you. I just want to talk to you. Can you spend some time with me? Just let's look at each other and talk just a little bit. Now, that would be skillful and wouldn't cause much of a problem most of the time. But WAVEs are more likely to do something like set a fire, like cause a problem, cause a fight, do something to engage their partner, or say something like, can we talk about our relationship? At a time when their partner is dead tired and it's too late to really talk about things like that. And so it begins to cause a problem. But it really is a bid for connection. There's a need to connect at night because it's a separation. And very little really needs to be done to help with that, as long as the partner understands what's happening and who they have as a partner, a wave partner, and what they need. The only person who seems not to have a reaction to the separation at night is the island. And I'm going to suggest to you that it's the island's ability to ignore that sign in themselves that they're losing something, that sense of being comfortable in their autoregulatory world, that they're going to get some relief by not having to deal with a human being. That makes them seem indifferent to the separation at nighttime. But they are having a problem at nighttime, too, if they're not connecting. The morning, waking up in the morning, and having somebody not be there. The wave, of course, is going to be very upset about this. Waking up in the morning and his or her partner has already gone to work, gone to school, has done something else. There's the shock of waking up and finding yourself suddenly alone and the person isn't there next to you. Now, the wave, again, is not the only person who really feels this. They feel it and they complain about it, but everybody else will feel this too, even the island, though the island will dismiss this as nonsense. But we can test this out in other ways, that as human beings, we're vulnerable in mornings when we come back into the world, and at night when we go away from the world. We're just vulnerable that way. And that, whether we admit it or not, we do better when we're put to bed at night, when we're with somebody, and when we sleep with them, all things being equal, and when we wake up with somebody and we launch with them that day. It gives us energy to, again, go out and slay the dragons of the world and do things that we ordinarily don't have any energy or courage to do. And one way to test this out is to just try it, to do a science experiment. And for the next week, you and your partner, if you have a partner, you and your partner just make a point of going to bed together and waking up together just for a week, doing something that ritualizes that, reading to each other, putting each other to bed by reading to each other, saying prayers, wishing the people in your life well, going through all the people in your life, wishing them well. That's better than counting sheep. Gazing into each other's eyes before you go to sleep, saying goodnight to each other, having sex. Anything so that you're putting each other to bed and you're the last contact that you have with the outside world before you nod off and go unconscious. Try that and wake up together and do something even small. Just wish each other well, kiss each other, hug each other, send each other off for the day, and see what your day is like. See if your performance in your work, in your studies, in whatever you do, just see if it's better. My guess is you're going to find that it's better. And sometimes in order to prove this stuff, you have to do it and just notice that things are better, because we can get lulled into feeling that things are okay because if we don't have it, we don't know what we're missing. So if you're not doing this, you think that everything's fine because you don't know the difference. What it would be like if you had these nighttime and morning rituals?